Welcome back, Stitches. Real Tech Talk, episode number 30. Now, I told you, I'm always going to bring you what's relevant, what's happening today. Today, West Coast lender no longer closing their book, Pier Street, filing Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Why? Every lender is tightening up. They're not giving loans. But there's a solution. There's something else out there. Alternative lending. We used to call it hard money. But how is tech attacking that? Today, I got my man Jeff on the show. And his company, Yield Easy, is attacking just that. So sit down, grab your popcorn, like and subscribe. And again, say what's up to the big man on the street. We're getting people to say hi, but it's not enough. So sit down. Next episode, Real Tech Talk. Let's go, baby.
That's why we're here. Bro, this is Real Tech Talk. Boom shakalaka. So who the hell are you, bro? You know, what are you into? What do you do?
Yo, you can keep it real here. Tell me about these real estate players.
Eric Brody is the managing principal of CEMVC LLC. All opinions expressed by Eric and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of CEMVC LLC. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. Clients of CEMVC LLC may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast.
All right, welcome back, people. Real Tech Talk, episode number 30. Today is so apropos as to what's happening out there. As you just heard yesterday, Pier Street filing Chapter 11, West Coast lender, regional bank, closing their book of business. So I brought you today my boy Jeff Gopstein, who has a company called Yield Easy, which is attacking specifically that space. Jeff, my man, thank you for coming in.
It is a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Now, listen up. Jeff actually is not from NYC. Where'd you come from, player?
I am from Philadelphia.
Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love.
Yeah, city of the sports teams that love to lose once they get close enough to win.
I love that. And listen, I thank you for coming in. So listen, we spoke about before the podcast started, and I think it's super important. Tell everyone before we get into what the solution is, what Yield Easy is doing, what section of real estate are you attacking and why is it such a big marketplace? Because I think that my audience has an idea but doesn't really understand. So let's talk about it.
Absolutely. All right. So let me just kind of back up here for maybe 30-second high level on myself.
Hell yeah.
All right. So come from Philly. I've spent the last almost 8 years since graduating basically working for guys like yourself. So I've worked in institutional multifamily development, family office, kind of traditional owner operators of apartments, urban infill, ground up new construction. And I didn't really spend a lot of time in capital markets. So all of my—
So capital markets being where you raise money.
Correct.
For these deals.
Correct. So I just knew that money would come in, but like that was about it. Like I understood how underwriting works. I knew kind of like high level construction. And I would work for these firms and I would identify sites and I would do like assemblages. And
so director of acquisitions.
Exactly. That was exactly my title.
And by the way, you only graduated 8 years ago, which means you're a youngin.
Yes.
And I believe that's why you were one of our first guests to actually have a branded hat. So I think we should give a clap it up for branding himself.
If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be wearing this. So thank you for that. Shout out to the group that made this for me. So yes, essentially I was director of acquisitions, VP of acquisitions, like kind of climbed those ranks within those different groups, all based in Philly, but a lot of them had deals nationally. So I was like flying on tiny little airplanes, going to like sub tertiary markets, like where you—
Sounds safe.
Sounds very safe. And I love planes too. You know, places where you were buying like deals for $10,000 a unit, which is like virtually unheard of. And like people were buying like 500 unit complexes for like $6 million. I can't even wrap
it. So just to put that into like perspective, let's say in New York, we even look in like the hotel space, you'd say 500,000 to 600, 700,000 a key. So if you're saying it's 10 G's, it's like pennies on the dollar as to the economics here. But so what? Money's money.
Exactly. Exactly. Something's got to give. I mean, they're not the easiest assets to manage and all that. But anyway, how this kind of all correlates is like, I never really had any like knowledge or deep understanding of capital markets other than you submit the underwriting to a bank for a large property. And this obviously we'll get into how it's different from like a person buying a house, but you submit to a—
But it's the same thing.
It is the same thing. Obviously they're
right. You are underwriting or you're trying to raise money, whether it's your cash, someone else's, and getting a debt or a loan to execute a business plan in the real estate world.
Correct. Correct. And these are lenders who are looking at the performance of the property, the accuracy of your pro forma numbers, what you think you're going to do with this asset, if you're going to reposition it.
And what do we call that? Asset-backed lending.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
That they like the underlying sticks and bricks or the business plan they were executing.
Exactly.
And that actual building or whatever, development in that specific area.
Exactly. And obviously, as you get further along, the risk gets off the table. You have recourse loans, non-recourse loans. So, you know, obviously, full recourse means your ass is on the line if something goes south.
Right. So you're saying, besides just the asset, you know, you bought a building and we're putting a loan on it, they're looking at you personally for other collateral, and that would be a full recourse loan.
Correct.
That, God forbid, it went south, no one cares, fuck you, pay me.
Correct, exactly.
Okay, got
and
it.
This is, I mean, there's like a bad boy carve-outs, you have all these different kind of stipulations in
right,
the loan
agreements.
Right,
but those are loan terms.
Exactly,
right?
Okay. Yes. So aside from that kind of high-level knowledge, I never really played in that space. So spent kind of the last few years in this multifamily world doing deals. I, you know, just have been naturally entrepreneurial. But the issue, as we all know, like relevant to today, the biggest hurdle to get into real estate is capital. Whether that is your own cash, whether that's outside investors, other people's money, equity, debt, whatever it might be, a lot of people don't have $1 million sitting in their pocket to go do deals. And I always kind of just had this challenge, was like, okay, well, I'll work these jobs. You know, I had some acquisition fees that I was paid on top of a salary. If I save up enough money, combine that, I have my license. So I was like brokering deals where I could. And I had this like play where I was like, all right, I'm going to go buy really, really bad properties in Philadelphia.
So you came up, so you took that experience and said, I'm going to become real estate entrepreneurial and do it on my own.
Correct.
Maybe in a different, you know, different, you know, concentric circle, smaller, on a
exactly.
smaller scale, but you were wanted to do it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Did my first deal, went well, repositioned the asset.
Everyone wants to know how you did your first deal. So how did you did the business plan, but how'd you get the money?
So I had saved up. The property I bought was a $75,000 single family residence in Philadelphia. I had saved up enough money over the course of the years to do it. I was debating whether I was going to do it via hard money loan and put some money down or all of the money down. And I figured, let me just do it all cash just in case anything goes south. I don't want to be liable to anybody. I'll reposition it. I'll rent it out. I'll refinance it, get all my equity back or all my cash that I put up back based on the new value, and then I'll do this. This will
all right,
be my
so
thing.
So for you, just so the audience knows, you're saying I paid cash, I then got a rental unit, right? So it's paying you return on the cash you put in. Once you had that cash flow, then you went to a bank
and said,
can you pull out some of my cash by refinancing?
Correct.
Which, by the way, if you can do that, it's huge, mm-hmm. but really most people can't, right?
Correct,
it's
right.
They need to get that loan up front,
yes.
and hope that it's a successful
exactly.
project.
Exactly. And basically thereon after, a bunch of different things happened, but the original concept of Yield Easy was basically born like 2 weeks before I had decided I was not going to rent it, I'm going to sell it, and I want to go all in on this idea. And the idea was, the original idea, and I don't want to take up too much time of the podcast because I think there's a lot to get into, but the original idea was this. Buying real estate, if you're a non-institutional person, given my experience of like being on the ground for 8 years, like
which is 99% of us. Let's just call it
99.9%.
That's everybody. That's everybody. We're not institutional.
Yeah, this is like the bigger pockets. This is everybody that is like not a 60-year-old guy with gray hair who's like been three generations deep of like family development.
Correct.
And I had been around these guys. I've worked for them. I've done this, and I was like, it was a clusterfuck. Like. You need, and I didn't even have a loan. So like take out one level of complexity. I had, okay, I got to manage the GC. I got to make sure like I have my rental license. If I do want to finance it, what happens? Title, insurance, inspection. And I'm like, I've played in this arena. I don't even know what the fuck I'm doing.
Right.
What about if you're a doctor, you're a dentist, you're a lawyer, you have money, you want to invest, like someone's either going to take you for a ride by taking advantage of you by doing it.
Or you get aggregated into one of these funds, right?
One of these
like
funds.
It's never like you're the entrepreneur.
Correct. And speaking, I mean, not a conflict of interest now, but like back then, like I would see what these LPs are getting. And it's like before they even get a dollar, the GP gets an acquisition fee, an asset management fee, a development fee. Nobody's even paid rent yet. And the GP's like, I mean, he's swimming in money.
Right. But the GP, general partner,
yes.
is still the common equity. He's still
correct.
The most at risk.
Yes.
So let him get paid.
He is the most at risk. He is doing all the work. He's making sure the asset gets done. But I saw how much interest these LPs had in real estate. And my thought,
the LP is the limited partner.
The limited partner,
who
yes.
has no rights. They're just giving you money to execute your business
correct.
Plan.
Correct. They are people that you go to and raise outside money from to execute on your business plan, and they are there, they're your investors. It's obviously not free, they partake in the deal. And what I had seen was so many of these guys were actually interested in the deal. And it was like, they were interested to the point where it was like, why aren't you doing this?
Right.
Like they like knew everything about the cap rates, the going, you know, unlevered yield on cost.
Sure.
And I'm like, you don't just know those terms. Like, you read that, you studied this, like, and to cut to the chase, the idea was we wanted to create a transaction management platform that allowed non-institutional, meaning everybody like us, platform to execute on deals. So we would take you through title, we'd take you through insurance, we'd take you through financing, property management, all of that. So that was the original version of YieldEasy. We raised some money. We got into an accelerator program in New York. Shout out to ERA. They're great.
Capital and now, which I love about tech, which is to talk about it, is whatever your first idea was, you're going to tell us how it pivoted, right?
Correct.
It's amazing. That's correct. Like people need to realize that just because you made this shiny idea, if you're not open to change, you fail.
Correct. And there's a quote, I think it's like Mr. Wonderful from Shark Tank. He's like, if you are not seeing any progress or making money after 3 years, like, take it behind the shed and shoot it in the head. Because mm-hmm. at that point, it's a hobby. And it took a long time for me to kind of like let go of this original idea because I was like, this is like, no, like, this has to work. Like, this right. this is a problem and this has to work.
Which is giving, just simply, was giving access to investors, limited partners, to real estate deals.
Correct. Okay. And essentially concierging them through correct. The transaction, which is a mess, which, by the way, that problem still exists. Mm-hmm.
Capital, what happened?
So essentially the fallout, and I want to make this as simple for your listeners to understand, essentially the fallout from the COVID capital markets mess is what happened. So as you guys know, there was a pandemic. The government needed to stimulate the economy because everybody was at home. They printed a bunch of money. Everybody got money. And that was across the board. That was people getting credit cards with limits that were way too high for them.
PPP.
And PPP loans.
SBA.
SBA loans. That was developers. That was banks. A lot of banks put their pencils down and tightened up. But a lot of banks were like, oh, great, there's going to be rescue capital. You know, you want to develop this spec 40-story
annex. Building. Rescue capital.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yes.
I'm sorry. It happens.
You had to be the plug that in real quick. And so essentially what had happened was interest rates due to inflation from that fallout had gotten so high
yep.
that the feedback we were getting from, you know, whether it was venture investors, whether it was like advisors we were talking to, was the market for non-institutional, meaning all of us, investors buying real estate is going to crash. I don't know how much I believed it then, but you know, essentially there was, you are not going to be able to go to market because your audience is no longer buying real estate because deals aren't penciling. And you know this better than anybody as a developer in New York, correct. Where your margins are just getting thinner and thinner and thinner.
Or gone.
Exactly.
And the equity's gone.
Exactly. So fast forward.
Wait, so let's back up and just in simple language. So all this money goes into the marketplace, Corona hits. Your regional lenders, of which everyone's reading about, are no longer lending. And there's a reason for it. They're having a lot of trouble. They were seeing the writing on the wall. And if a regional lender, for someone like you and I, who's not institutional, was a major place where you and I went to get money in order to execute real estate deals, there was a massive vacuum. And that's how I started the show, saying Pier Street, that West Coast bank, the regional lender, First Republic, Signature Bank, you know, all either PacWest out of the game.
Done.
And no longer lending money.
Correct.
Or even around.
Correct.
Right? So now there's this massive vacuum. So how do we do real estate deals when that massive, I guess, you know, bucket of capital is toast?
Correct. So to your point, people need to execute on deals. People need to continue to transact, whether they're buying a home, whether they're buying a house to flip, whether they're buying commercial deals.
And, right. And any real estate entrepreneurial business.
Exactly.
On any vertical.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so.
So what do you do?
You go to what is called an alternative lender. And I think that's
that
the theme of our show. So most people know lending. When they hear the term lending, they hear bank. They hear maybe like a private equity fund. But most people's mind kind of stops right there.
Right. No, I think before private equity, I think that people don't realize there's other lenders besides banks.
Exactly. And so just before I forget, basically the inception of what we are today, I was speaking with who was now my co-founder, my partner. He is an alternative lender, and we will obviously get into all.
No, to talk to us. What's an alternative lender?
So an alternative lender is somebody who primarily lends out capital on an asset-backed platform, meaning a lot of the time when you're buying a house, you are getting underwritten. What is your credit score? What is your income?
Correct.
Is your salary minus your expenses going to be able to support your monthly mortgage payment? If not, you're giving your keys back to the bank.
And they don't want
your home. That's your primary residence. So that's why they're underwriting you.
Correct.
Because they it's not a good look if banks are taking over your home.
And they're not in the business of real estate investment and repositioning, and it costs a lot of money to foreclose. And it's a nightmare, and you saw it in 2008. So essentially, there was this evolution in the last like decade and a half. And mind you, like while this was happening, I was still like knees deep in like multifamily world. Mm-hmm. Of what is colloquially known as hard money loans. So there was an entire group of people who basically said, okay, banks are pencils down. This is like after the fallout of like 2008. There are still rich people, and real estate is arguably still the safest asset class in the world. So how can we lend out capital, have protective equity behind that capital, meaning be a senior secured lender, meaning you have the first right.
So they're basically the bank.
They're basically the bank.
Little more expensive because it's an individual human's money.
Correct.
Right? Like
correct.
That, and I think that's important.
Yep.
It's not some massive fund, sovereign wealth,
correct.
Deposits from the American public.
Correct.
It's your money.
Correct.
Right?
Yep.
Willing to now be the bank.
Exactly. And this is what my now business partner has been doing for the last almost 20 years. And he started.
And I think also fascinating is it's asset backed.
Correct.
They like your business plan, not so much to do with you.
Correct.
They're interested in funding that business plan about that piece of real estate, which takes out this idea that you have a certain amount of credibility, you have this tons of experience. It's less important because they like the real estate.
Exactly. And a lot of these guys who are doing these private loans understand real estate, understand valuations, understand what happens if, you know, the borrower leaves the country tomorrow. So my partner started doing small loans on deals in Philadelphia. Like we're talking like $30,000-$40,000 loans, mm-hmm. collateralized by property for 50% LTV. Meaning if the LTV stands for loan to value, mm-hmm. meaning if a property when it is renovated and complete is worth $100,000, he's lending $50,000 against that property, paying out the borrower to do his renovation, to do whatever he's gonna do there. And if the borrower gets on a plane and leaves, my partner owns the property for $50,000.
Right, which he likes his basis, right? So his
exactly.
downside risk is there. His upside is you pay him back plus his interest, which is higher than a bank's.
Exactly.
Great business.
And so he obviously is not the only person in the world that caught on to this. And this basically wave of alternative lenders, hard money guys, came onto the scene and created an incentivized way for either a newbie, somebody with a lower credit score, somebody who hasn't been doing this for 10 years, somebody who's non-institutional, like somebody like me who they understand the deal, they understand the numbers, they've done the research, they know the project, but they don't have the money.
Correct.
And there was just a massive influx. So what started out years ago was like, it was a handful. There is 10,000 private real estate bridge lenders. And I say bridge because essentially the industry has gotten so cleaned up that it's gone from like a hard money loan to a bridge loan.
And bridge meaning, just for the audience, they're not doing 30-year mortgages.
Correct.
They're not, their money, like you're saying, is to enact a business plan.
Yep.
And then you should go to a bank and take them out.
Yep.
So when we say bridge, we mean 1, 2, maybe 3 years.
Correct.
Right? It's in and out.
Yep.
Right?
Or you're fixing and flipping the property, you sell it off. So let's
talk about this for a second.
Yes.
So now that we understand direct lending.
Yep.
So now let's talk about that on a massive scale. Mm-hmm. We heard about CMBS and we've heard about, what is it, MLO? No, what's the other one?
Whatever,
CMBS, all right? Commercial mortgage-backed securities, which basically was the banks would lend money, mm-hmm. right? They would use their balance sheet, pay for you to close that loan.
Yep.
And then the bank the next day turns around, by the way, it happened to me, it happens all the time, and sell that, whether it's to the federal government, publicly traded bonds, right? It goes to the secondary market.
As a pool.
Right, as a pool.
Hundreds
so it means
months.
That like you think you're closing, let's say with Morgan Stanley, that bad boy, when they close, yep. it is their money. The next day, they get reimbursed, like
correct.
It's out the door. And
yep.
that is how loans kind of work.
Exactly.
Right?
Yep.
How about in this business?
Yes. So,
because we were saying these are like individual wealthy people. Maybe they collected some money. They'd only be able to do a few things.
Of course.
And then that's it, right? Because
yep.
they're waiting the 3 years for the money to come back.
Exactly. So they had no way of what is we know is like recapitalizing their debt or mm-hmm. like cleaning up their balance sheet and getting their debt back.
Which just, you know, for audiences, like if you have $1 million
yep.
and you lent $100,000 to 10 people, you're out of business
because
you're not doing anything. So what they were doing with the money, like if you were a bank, is there was a market to now sell that paper.
Correct. And you'd recapitalize your loans.
Right. You'd have your money back and yep. you could put it back on the street in more loans.
And your listeners are probably asking, like, why would you sell it off if you initiate a loan? Because these lenders are getting origination fees. So they're getting money up front. And they're probably selling their loans over par, over what they originated them for. And they get to maintain a spread in that loan.
Meaning if the rate they gave to you on the street is 10, they can sell it at 8 and make that arbitrage.
They're going to make a 2% spread for the mm-hmm. life of the loan, and now it belongs to whoever bought it. It's on their books. So as this relates to my partner, him and I were talking. Yield Easy was kind of like up in flames at this point because the world was fucked. And this is what he does. So he's been in the space for many, many years.
Identified a problem he has.
Exactly.
What was the problem?
His problem was he had a large exit from a residential mortgage business that he was running, and he had turned to this kind of direct lending business. And we were talking about how there was no liquidity in the market. So
right, which means he dumped the loans out on the street, loved the loans on the real estate he had, and he's like, "How do I get my money back?"
Correct. He had what are effectively known as like buy rate contracts with other offices or funds that do basically it's like a reverse line of credit where. They say, okay, here's our buy box. If you originate this loan with this credit score borrower with this type of LTV, we will buy it for 10.25.
So he could get some of his money back.
Correct.
But it seems to me that business is like consistently chasing, how do I get my money back to redeploy it,
yep.
right? You're constantly stressed about that.
Yep. And what had happened was the space has gotten so institutionalized that the buy box has gotten smaller and smaller and smaller to the point where it's like, it's basically CMBS. So now, all of these alternative lenders are lending on fundamentally sound deals, amazing deals, low LTV, great interest rate.
First position,
which is the most important part. Track record, this is the person's 10th deal, but oh, his credit score is 10 points below, we're not buying it. Or the LTV is too low.
Right, the regional bank said F you.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so the liquidity has gotten very scarce, and so the issue we identified was we should create a marketplace to bring liquidity back to the market. Give investors, meaning like people, everyday people, accredited investors, the ability to participate in this asset class. And we'll talk about how big that is.
How big is it?
So it's about a $200 billion per year asset class, meaning $200 billion per year of like individually funded loans. And now there's some small intermediate kind of size groups that do this.
It's basically creating the secondary market.
Exactly. So the idea of Yield Easy was born, and
just to go back. So Yield Easy was born to attack that transaction problem. I mean, this guy, the money man, 10 million, 20 million, right? Puts loans onto the street because asset backed, he loves the real estate, he's in Philly, right? And now he's trying to turn around and say, I have these loans.
Yep.
Who wants to partner with me? Who wants to buy them from me to give me back my money to originate more loans?
Correct.
And he was saying to you, I can originate. It's crazy because like you said, it's not a four-letter word anymore. Regional banks are gone. There's so much more demand for this type of money. But then he turns around and he's like, but I got a great business, but I'm out of money.
Right.
I gotta get some liquidity back.
Yep.
And you're like, oh, that's an interesting because
yes.
you've identified that there's tons of other humans that are super interested in being in the business of the lending
Correct.
And giving you your money back
Correct.
On that.
Or even just partaking alongside. Like you see so many of these. There's just like in a tsunami of alternative lending platforms, and we'll talk about Pier Street, but you have, you know, Yield Street.
But even before that, just so you know,
yes.
and I think it's important for the audience to know, 10 years ago, it was single family mm-hmm. to four family.
Yep.
Okay, we're talking about, I don't know, 1 million, like you were saying, 75 Gs. That same business can now be on 150 units
Correct.
Because there's still no regional lender,
Correct.
Which means now that could be a $100 million loan,
Yep.
right? But these are individuals. They need to have the 100.
Yep.
So it's like, how do we collect money to do these incredible
right.
deals?
Right. Or pseudo individuals who have warehouse lines with banks, who their lending capacity is much larger, but this is where the conversation of rescue capital starts to come up with a lot of these deals that multifamily guys were doing when the market was good, and now their lenders have turned their backs on them.
Correct.
And so, yeah, we basically realized like there's an opportunity here. Him and I kind of, we've known each other for a little while, just being in the community together. And I pivoted everything I was doing. Like I basically, we kept nothing other than the logo. And I said, we both kind of realized like, this is fucking massive because there's a liquidity issue with lenders who can't recapitalize their loans, meaning get their money back.
Right.
There's 14 million accredited households in the United States. That's not even counting going upstream to family offices, private equity funds, who, by the way, love this asset class but can't transact on it because it's still done on Excel, a spreadsheet, an email. They send over a tape of loans. Horrible tech. And that's kind of how the business basically transformed from this kind of concierge transaction management play to what we're doing today.
So yeah, give me the one-liner now. Now we understand. You've set it all up. What's YieldEasy?
YieldEasy is an alternative investment platform that grants investors access to real estate-backed loans, giving you the ability to invest in a real estate loan.
And giving your lender the availability to have a little bit either more liquidity, more speed, correct, some confidence that he's going to have money when he needs it.
To recycle his capital and to basically continue the flow of funds into the market. And so like...
And now with this vacuum of regional lenders, these guys are going to become massive over the next few years.
Yes.
Like this is huge.
Correct. And so we're piloting with my co-founder's origination arm, and it's basically becoming our in-house origination platform. So we're doing...
Oh, that's awesome.
Thank you. So we're doing about 10 to 15 million a month today. This business is about eight months old, the origination arm. 10 to 15 million a month, to the point where him and I talk and he's telling me about how he's like already, you know, constrained on how much he can lend because he's like waiting for this platform, YieldEasy, to launch to be able to sell these loans.
So you already have the captivated customer. So where do you stand?
So we are primed. I don't know when this podcast is going to go live, but we're primed to launch in the beginning of July, which is like right around the corner. We have a fully built out tech team. We have five full staff.
Engineers. I just want to full stop. Real tech talk, people, finding the guys nascent about to start pre-seed. You tell me if you're finding people like that. I am sorry. This is a massive idea. You are seeing it just when it launches. We will be back to you in like 6 months and watch what the difference is, right? And it's all about access in our game. So it's like, damn, I love this idea.
NX Ventures.
NX Ventures, hit them up. So you're about to launch.
We're about to launch. We have 60 million live in supply. We had brought on the former head of Realty Mogul Marketing to help us with demand and kind of sales efforts. This basically responsible.
Yeah, it's a marketplace. You got to get both sides.
Exactly. So mm-hmm. It's a chicken and the egg problem. And our problem, I don't know whether it's chicken or the egg, but we had our challenge is going to be the demand side. Not, I don't want to say challenge because
challenge is challenge. Look, we keep it real. Like, these are fucking new businesses. We got to solve these things.
Yeah, I mean, look,
you know?
Nothing, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
These things don't happen overnight. And the reality
is authenticity is the way to go. Let me tell you something. So
I agree.
I hear you.
I agree.
So how can people learn more? Where are you at?
So we are at YieldEasy.com. Hopefully by the time this launches, we are live. People can sign up. The only stipulation is that per the SEC guidelines on crowdfunding, and the vehicle we use is called a borrower payment dependent note. So we are selling a piece of a real estate backed loan that when it's paid by the borrower every month, you get a monthly distribution. It's backed by collateral, which is the property. So right. In the case that the borrower stops paying, YieldEasy recovers that asset for pennies on the dollar, goes through the sales process, and redistributes funds to everybody.
Yeah. I think it's important people know like kind of the deal, right? Which I feel like it's fascinating, and why I love it is like, it makes sense, right? We're right. Lending at low leverage.
Right.
Okay. We're lending to people that the business plan hasn't worked.
Might I add, by the way, we didn't even talk about interest rates.
Yeah, no, you're above what banks, right? So it's a great business. And if these people do fail, right? It's not like, then everyone's going to be perfect. Mm-hmm. But part of it, you're like, no, they won't. But don't worry. We got you. Your rate is just, your LTV is just so low. We're chilling.
Yep.
We'll flip this thing. We're going to make our money. Like, we're good.
And the weird part, and this is very like, you wouldn't think this, but the default rate is sub 4%. So, and that's factual data. That's based on my partner's portfolio now. He's got like 160 loans. Below five are in foreclosure. There's like a small number that are in they're trying to get caught up on payments and trying to become, active on their payments. But the actual foreclosure percentage is extremely low. And the reason I think that is because if you have a mortgage on your house and you stop paying, the bank takes your home. You lost whatever equity you had, unless you're upside down. If an alternative lender takes your project, you just forewent all of the upside. So who's more incentivized to make payments?
Yeah, of course.
And so this is kind of something that we've been trying to educate a lot of our, you know, VC conversations.
Oh, by the way, with. I'm not for nothing, and I'm not saying like it's still secure. Meaning, if you're a real estate investor and you know they shit the bed and you had to take it over, it's 4%, which is fascinating. I thought it would have been higher. Way not low. A big deal. Yep. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know it may take a little longer, and people may say, "Oh, my RRR or my return might be off," but like. Yep. You're safe. You're good.
Yeah. And we have, so another thing that we're doing is we have a across the board 10% capture rate on all performing loans that goes into an account that in the case of a foreclosure like this, that is basically.
Oh, so you're keeping reserves. Quote,
yes. It's essentially, it's a reserve account. So you have about 30 to 50% of protective equity, meaning you own it for the difference of pennies on the dollar. If anything happens, you have the reserve account and you're a first lien position. So we can't say anything is a guaranteed other than death and taxes in this world, but.
No, there's no such thing. But look, you know, you got to mitigate your risk. And I think that it's a great vehicle to invest, honestly, you know, and I'm excited to watch it and I'm glad I have you on. You know, I don't know. I wish you the best of luck and I appreciate you coming through. And I think you explained it perfectly. And I think there can't be a more apropos subject to what's happening, but yep. We had to lay the foundation so people kind of understood what you're attacking.
Yep.
So. All right, best of luck, brother, man. I can't wait to hear what happens.
Absolutely. Yeah. We'll be back in 6 months.
All right, brother. You heard it. You know that's a massive market. You know that the interest rates are higher than what banks are getting. There is money to be made on both sides, the real estate entrepreneur and the person giving the debt. This is a need. And I'll tell you what's interesting is the capital that goes into this business is finite. It's not infinite. It's not like banks just get new deposits. It's finite. So if he can create the liquidity into that marketplace, then this company is going to be massive. What I'm interested in knowing is like regulation, how you qualify people. But the fact remains, if you have extra capital and you're like, how do I invest? Stocks, bonds, should I go here? Should I go to the federal government? Let me tell you something. When they get big, and in July they are, and you have extra capital and you qualify, how could you not put money into the real estate market, especially if you underwrite that business plan, agree with what that developer is doing? You got to put your money where your mouth is. You got to take risk. I don't know. I'm keeping a close eye on this bad boy because this one could be huge.